The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
Please hold.
Finding parking has never been easier. So I'd like to discuss today for the time that we have, of course, the Parsha of Korach. The Korach for you is this week's Parsha. For us here in Eretz Yisrael, it was last week. So there's a certain element of Terah Lishma. But having said that, the Prima Gordon says there's an Inyan of Inyan of the Yoma, something that's Nogeya to that particular time. The Prima Gordon says that Parsha of Korach is Inyan of the Yoma every day of the year. Because the Inyan of Korach is machloka, how to identify it, how to avoid it. And that's something that is nogea every day. So it's certainly topical wherever we are. And I'd like to start by referring to a well-known episode in the Gemara, in the Masechet Bavah Basra, and the Fifth Perek is the Mozaf Ayin Dalet, Ayin Hei, the goddess of Rabba Baba Chana, all those most unusual incidents. In one case, and I think one of the best known of those sections, is where Rabbi Baba Chana says that he once met Taya, a certain Arab guide, who said to him, Tova achvei lach benuei Korach, come with me, follow me, I'll show you where Korach and his men are buried. So, Rabbi Baba Chana, he follows this Arab into the desert. Nowadays, of course, that's not such advisable action, but this is in the good old days, and he follows this Arab into the desert, and they come to a certain place, and as the Gemara described it, there's a crevice in the ground, and there's smoke rising, and that's where Korach and his men are buried. So then, The guide, he takes a piece of wool, this is all described in the Gemara, takes a piece of wool, dips it in water, and attaches it to the end of a spear. And that whole thing then is lowered down into the crevice, and before too long, they can hear a crackling sound, and he raises up the spear. And what happens at the tip of the spear is the water had evaporated and the wool was singed or burned, and that's where Korach and his men are, that's where the fire is. Of course, as we know, Gemara goes on to say that he told Rabbi to put his ear to the ground and listen to what they're saying, and it's stuck in the gear for today, because they were saying Moshe the Torah or Emes. And that's his own discussion, what's the meaning of Moshe Emes and Terasa Emes? Are those two different things, two ways of saying the same thing? And that's part of their tikkun. They have to announce Moshe Emes and Terasa Emes. And this person said to him that this is something that they need to say once a month, every month. And the Rashbam, in the Peirush there in Bava Basra, adds every Rosh Chodesh. But today, Rosh Chodesh, if you could only find the place where Bnuei Korach are, and put your ear to the ground, you'd be able to hear Moshe the Terasso Emes. The question that we need to ask is, what did we learn from this episode, and why did it have so many pieces in it? As if to say, if you tell me that every month they need to say Moshe the Terasso Emes, so that's part of their tikkun. But this Arab guide, he went through a whole production. It was a whole, he had props with the wool, and then in the water, and then with the spear, when he lowers it down. What did he add to anyone's understanding of this whole situation? If there's smoke coming up, no smoke without fire. One doesn't need to prove that there's fire there. What exactly was the contribution of that part of the proceedings with the spear and the wool and so on and so forth. So we need to go back to Korach and Sam. And Rashi raises a very interesting question. Rashi asks, what exactly was it that motivated Korach to get the whole machlokas going? Ma ro'a Korach lachlokim Moshe. We take it for granted, of course, it's Pashas Korach. It happened. But it's not a small thing to argue with Moshe. And the answer, says Rashi very distressingly, is Niskane al-Nisiyusa shalot tzapam ben Zion. He was jealous over the fact that his cousin, al-Tzapam ben Zion, became the Nasi al-Kahos. And as Rashi goes on to describe the mishpachology there, Kahos had four sons. Amram is the oldest. So Kahos says, okay, Amram's the oldest. So his son, Moshe, becomes something. Aaron becomes something. But then who's next? Yitzhak. Yitzhak's my father. So I should be next in line for something. But I got jumped over. And it went all the way to the youngest brother, Uziel, and Al-Tzapam ben Uziel is the Nasi. And that engendered feelings of jealousy on Korach's part, and therefore says Korach, Hareni Chole Kolod, Umavatel Estevaro. I'm going to start a machlokas with Moshe. I'm going to undermine him and undo everything. And really, what Rashi is saying is, the simple reading of Rashi, what's the machlokas between the Farshi Rashi, is that Korach is not really that interested in the Avodah. He is primarily interested in being a Nasi. It's possible that he in time became also interested in the Kahuna, but that was not his initial or primary concern. It's all about Nibarosh, who's the Nasi. So says Rashi. And I would like to ask two questions on this Rashi. The first on his words, and the second on their location. The first question, which is a fair question, I think, an important question to ask, is Rashi asked, what did Korach see that he started a machlokas with Moshe? But we now need to ask, what did Rashi see that made him think that Korach saw anything? By which we mean, if you look in the Psukim, Dvarim Mifurashim, Korach, like all the other 250, is after the Avodah. That's what it sounds like. Now, if the Pasuk says that he's demanding the Avodah, he doesn't say a word about being Nasi. So how does Rashi know that there's more to what Korach wants than what he says? How does Rashi know there's something else here? Maybe all there is what Korach said. I mean, it's possible. So our first question is on Rashi's question. Rashi says, what did he see? And our question is, well, what makes you think he saw anything beyond what he's talking about, the Avodah? The second question, which is also important to note, is where Rashi discusses Korach's motivation. As we know, we always need to pay attention not only to what Rashi says, but also to where he says it. Rashi's discussion of Korach's jealousy is in Pasuk Aleph, Dibur HaMatzil, V'dasan V'aziram. And that is also very unusual, because Korach has already been mentioned in the Pasuk. We've seen Vayikra Korach. Rashi has two Diburim on Vayikra Korach. And then Ben Yitzhak, Ben Kas, Ben Levi. Rashi bears no ink discussing everything that Korach is about. And then, apparently, we finished. So now, we can move on to whoever else is in the Pasuk. Who's next? Dathan and Aviram, says Rashi. You have to think about what motivated Korach to get into the Machlokas. And our question was, well, no, and apparently neither did you. I mean, I'm not until now. So it's a bit of a delayed reaction. I mean, we don't need to feel sorry for Dathan and Aviram, but they didn't even get their own Dibur HaMatzil to themselves. And Rashi, because as soon as we start with them, Rashi gets back to Korach. There seems to be a bit of a delayed reaction. What's behind this deferred post-discussion about Korach? But as is so often the case, these two questions actually serve to answer each other. Because if we look at the beginning of Rashi's Dibur HaMaskil of Dasan and Aviram, so Rashi says, and I personally think this is one of the most surprising Rashis in the whole Parsha. Dasan v'Aviram, says Rashi, how are they involved? B'shvil, Shahayav Shevet Reuven, Shara Dechaneyot and Temana. You see, Reuven and Kehas are neighbors because they're both on the south side of the Mishkan. In Machane Levia, Kehas is to the south, and then outside of that, concentrically, Shevet Reuven is also to the south. And so, you know what they say, says Rashi, Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shechena. And that's why they got involved. What is so surprising about this Rashi? That Rashi basically says, Dasan and Aviram, you know how they got involved in Machloka? They were in a bad neighborhood. They had bad neighbors. They fell into bad company. Oyla Rasha Hula Shechena. If I didn't know better, I would have thought the other way. I would have thought they're the Rasha. Maybe Korach is their neighbor. And Rashi says, no. But you got Korach. Korach is the one that got everything going. And Dasan and Aviram, you know why they got involved? They had a bad neighbor, bad company. That's got to be the most positive thing anyone, or sympathetic thing anyone ever said about Dasan and Aviram. They fell into bad company. Because anyone else, you ask, will say, they were the original bad company. Limited or unlimited. So this is really an amazing Rashi. Adasim and Aviram, they got involved because they're neighbors with Korach. If your neighbors with Korach, bad things will happen. Let us not forget, of course, there were hundreds of thousands of other neighbors of Korach who didn't get involved. So obviously, found the kindred spirit. But nonetheless, Rashi does say, Oy le Rasha, Oy le Shechena. The Korach is the Rasha, and Adasim and Aviram are the neighbors of the Rasha. Once that's true, says Rashi, if in Kainim HaDvarim, we're going to have to reopen a discussion that we thought was closed. Namely, what motivated Korachim? You can no longer say that it's just about the Avodah, because if it's just about the Avodah, he would not be considered such a Rasha that even Dathan and Aviram are neighbors of a Rasha. Once we see that his shutrim here, who were even influenced, and if you influence Dasan and Aviram, if you're that type of Rasha, there's got to be a lot more going on than just the fact that you like to do the Avodah. And that's like an amazing situation, because when you get going, as long as you just see Korach, there's nothing to say. But as soon as it's followed by Dasan and Aviram, his neighbors of a Rasha, now there's plenty to say. And that's where Rashi discusses it there. It turns out, and this is a very frightening thing about Korach, is that he's asking for Avodah, and it's not necessarily even what he wants. And that makes it very difficult to converse with him or to discourse with him, because Moshe knows that he really wants the Messiah. And of course, why does Korach not mention the Messiah? For obvious reasons. No one cares if Korach is the Nazi. 250 people care if everyone can do the Avodah. So in terms of getting a crowd together and getting an assembly together, the platform of Avodah will launch Korach. If the platform is Korach for president, so no one's going to join. No one cares. And no one would go up against Moshe. And that's why he chooses something that he doesn't even want. The whole Avodah is a red herring, according to Rashi as understood by the Maharal. And that makes it impossible to now to deal with him. Because you can't say, why do you want to be the Nasi? Because for that, Korach will say, what do you mean? Whoever spoke about Nasi, why would you think that? All I want is the Avodah, like everyone else. But if you talk to him about the avoda, you're practically wasting your time. So it's mimonavshak, it doesn't come to a good conclusion. And that's why when Moshe, just before he calls for the earth to open its mouth, at that stage, Moshe lets Korach know, you know, we never spoke about it because you made it impossible to speak about it, to pin it to you. But I know that really what was bothering you was the Messias of El Tzafon, and you thought that that was my doing, and it was all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why Moshe says, with those cases,
Kol HaLashon.
This is in Pasuk Kafcheh. With this you'll know, Ki Hashem Shlachani, that Hashem sent me la'asosos kol ha'masim ve'ela, to do all of these masim, Ki lo mi'idi. It wasn't from my heart. Kol ha'masim ve'ela. What's kol ha'masim ve'ela? That sounds like a few things, or at least two things, or how many? Rashi explained, what's kol ha'masim ve'ela? Sha'atisa pi ha'dibur. It was all based on what Hashem said. La'atis la'aron kuhuna gedola, the Aaron the Kohen Gadol, Bonav the Gani to his son will be Kohanim with him, the El Tzafon Nasi HaKohati, and El Tzafon the Nasi. No one ever spoke about El Tzafon being the Nasi, whether that was a point of contention. Moshe knows that it is the whole time. He can never speak about it because Korach never mentioned it. But just before Korach goes down, just before the everything ends, Moshe says, don't think that I didn't know that that's what it's all about. And from a certain point of view, Moshe thinks to Korach, shame on you. But aside from everything else, for taking the concept of avoda and using it just as a weapon in order and getting people involved, and you don't even care whether they get the avoda or not, as long as everything crumbles and you can become the Nazi after that. That is a very reprehensible thing. And that's why in Pirkei Avos, when we talk about machlokas l'shem shemayim, so who's machlokas l'shem shemayim? Moshe, pardon me, Hillel v'Shammai. The two sides, Hillel and Shammai. But interestingly, when we talk about machlokas, ezoi machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim, what is that? Korach v'chol adosa. It doesn't mention Korach and the other side, Korach and Moshe, equivalent to the two sides, opposing sides of Hillel and Shammai. It mentions Korach v'chol adosa, the teacher, say the Meforshim, that for on a certain level, Korach is as much in machlokas with the people on his own side. He has as little to do with them, and his interests are as disaligned with them as they are with Moshe. And that's a trademark often of machlokas shalolish in Shemayim. There's as much lack of unity within the people in the same camp. They may be brought together with by a common enemy, by Kalua Moshe Val Aaron, that they have very little in common. Machlokas is really ultimately between Korach and his Eda. And this brings us to a further point. Not only is Korach misrepresenting, shall we say, or abusing the concept of Avoda to get what he wants, he's also abusing the concept of the Jewish people. By that we mean, he's claiming to represent the people and using that as leverage, but in the end, he doesn't really care about the people. That's an abuse of the concept of Kahal. He himself is Polish, mina Kahal. He himself, he doesn't care about the Kahal. Nayika Korach, Rashi says, he took himself to one side. It's just about Korach, but he makes it about the Jewish people. These are very, very holy concepts. The Avoda, the Jewish people. To use them just to get personal gain when one doesn't care about them at all, that is a very reprehensible thing. And again, machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim, you'll never hear holier things coming out of people's mouths than when it's machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim. And that's why it says in the Meforshim, the test was in Ketores. Because Ketores is about the connectivity, the unity of Bnei Yisrael. They all come together. Even the Chalbanot, you come together, that really fully merged in. If you really represent the community, if you really represent the connection, if you have that connection with people, you will come to no harm through the Ketores. But if you're just using the concept of the community for your own personal gain, then you have abused the concept of Ketores and you could suffer by it. In fact, I think this will shed light on one of the most interesting and enigmatic individuals in the entire Parsha Torah. He's mentioned in Prophet Aleph, never hear from him again. He disappears. Dathan and Aviram, and Korah perhaps also, disappeared into the ground. Ohn ben Pelet disappeared into thin air. Imamish makes it into the list of Prophet Aleph, by Yikach Korah. The Dathan, the Aviram, the Bnei Eliyahu, the Ohn ben Pelet. He is one of four people mentioned by name in Prophet Aleph. We'd imagine we'd be hearing a lot from him, as we do from Korah and Dathan and Aviram. We never hear another word from him. What happened to him? Pasuk doesn't say. But the Gemara says, of course, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that Kotev, his wife saved him. She made him see them. And she said to him, listen, what are you getting involved? What will you get from me? Nothing. Whoever will be the leader, you'll be a follower to them. Or whatever be the Rav, you'll be the Talmud. What difference does it make to you? He's the Rav. You'll stay the same. Currently, Moshe's the leader. So you're a follower of Moshe. What will then happen? Okay, if Korah succeeds, and maybe he won't, but even if he does, the Korah's the leader, and you're following him. You'll stay where you are. Those were her words. And Ohn saw the light. This was a moment of revelation for him. And at that point, the only question was how to get out of it. And Korah's wife, as the wives often do, say, just don't get in the way. Leave it to me. And she extricated him from that machlok. But the question that I think we should ask, and we're very familiar with this whole part of the story, is what chiddush did she bring to Ohn? In other words, she says, if you're currently the follower, you'll stay a follower, either of Moshe or of Korah. And Ohn is like, if it's never thought about that before, it's like, wow, okay, well, you're right. So, but what was he thinking? Did he think things would be different than what she said? It's very clear what she's saying. So where's the chiddush here? But it could be that the chiddush is that Ohn did not think that he would remain a follower. Not that he would thought that he would become a leader. But he thought that if Korah succeeded, there would be no leader. And therefore there would be no followers. By which we mean, what Korah comes to Moshe and says is, Ki kol ha'eda kulam kadosha. Everyone knows equally. Umadua tismasu es kalashem. Al kalashem. Why then are you raising yourself higher than everyone else? If everyone's holy, no one needs to be above them. Which means that seemingly what Korach is saying is that we don't need leaders. Now, if you don't need leaders, then what does Korach want? Officially, what does he want? Nothing. Meaning just to rid the Jewish people of leaders because everyone's equally holy. If there's no leaders, then everyone gets promoted because everyone's equal now. That's what Ohn thought would happen, and he believed Korach. And therefore he says, my status and my station will benefit if Korach is right, because currently I'm a follower of Moshe, but if Korach is right, I won't have to be a follower of anyone. Everyone will be equal. Ohn's wife disavowed him of that notion. And basically what she said is, that's insane. If you think that if Korach succeeds, there will be no leaders, you are in error, because there will always be leaders. And if the struggle was that there should be no leaders, then whoever led that struggle is the new leader. And therefore you need to know nothing will change for you, because if Moshe is not the leader, Korach will be the leader. And even though Korach ostensibly is saying there should be no leaders, that's only until the current leader is removed. At that point, he will step in. First comrade is the new leader. And it's very interesting that when Ohn understood what she's saying, Ohn's wife, all those hundreds and thousands of years ago, was the first one to recognize that even if everyone really is equal, some people will always be more equal than others. And no one will be more equal than the one that led the fight for equality. And all of this is Korach's abuse of the concept of the Kahal, of the Kedusha of Yisrael. And once again, these are very distressing aspects of the Machlokas, because so many holy things were dragged into the Machlokas. Not only the concept of Avodah, not only the concept of the Jewish people, but also Torah. Even Torah was represented in this way. Korach asks his famous question, Tala Shekhudah Trela. A Chudah Trela is all you need on the corner. What if the whole beggar is made of Trela? Does it still need a thread of Trela? Moshe says, yeah. And Korach starts to laugh. What do you mean? The whole beggar, one string will be enough. So if the whole beggar is made of Trela, that should certainly be fine. Next. What about a house full of Sefer Torah? Does it need a mezuzah? Moshe says, yes, halacha, does it need a mezuzah? Once again, Korach gets going. The house is full of just normal things. Two parshiyos will be fine. But the house is full of Sefer Torah. For sure it shouldn't need a mezuzah. He's not only looking to underline the process of halacha, for the laws of halacha. These are references to Moshe. That's really what Korach is saying. You're the string of Tchelet, but we don't need you because we're the Beged, and the Beged is entirely Tchelet. You're the Mezuzah, but we don't need you because we're all Sefer Torah. The whole of Jewish people are the house full of Sefer Torah. So he's using the Halacha as a veiled attack on Moshe. So not only is Avodah brought in for his purposes, not only is the Jewish people brought in, the Kedusha of the Jewish people, but even Torah. And once again, ask Korach, why are you using Divrei Torah in this way? So he'll be the offended party. What do you mean this way? I'm asking questions. I made Birchat HaTorah this morning. I just want to make sure good on my investment. But in the end, it all comes down. And this brings us back to where we started. For the guide, we took Rabbi Bava Chana to show him the Nuri Korach. And not only did he show him where they were, that the Gemara describes, he took the wool, he dipped it in water, he put it on a spear, he lowered it down, where the water evaporated and the wool got singed. And we asked, what does that add to our appreciation of this entire episode? There's the Orach Lamer, Rabbi Yaakov Effinger, and his Drashas Minchas Ani. Here the guide, of course, was no normal guide. He was actually depicting what Korach himself did. Korach went to war against Moshe. And the question we need to ask is, what's the war about? Or to put it slightly differently, what's at the tip of the spear? A spear is a tool of war. What's at the tip of the spear? And what's the answer? Wool. And what is wool? Wool, says Minchas Ani, as we know, represents covered, like wool is the material from which clothing is made. And clothing is mechabe, mechadusi, Rabbi Yochanan calls his clothing mechadusi. We learn from the word zechibadato, that's special clothes for Shabbat. The clothing made from wool is about covered. What was the war with Moshe about? The issue of covered, that's at the tip of the spear. There's just one thing though. He can't just put the wool on the tip of the spear and lunge at Moshe. No one cares about Korach's covered. So what does he do first? He takes the wool and he soaks it in water. And water is terror. And now he puts it on the tip of the spear and he can lunge away. Because what Korach is saying is, it's not about my covet. And someone has to do it. Your humble servant just steps forward. And my covet is just the wool, the material to hold the water. It's about Torah. I just want to ask Kalach and Shinas. It's hard to wage war against someone like that. But as each hour approached, and it became more and more obvious that it is about Korach, as it got closer and closer to the fire, what happened to all that water? Evaporated. And what's left? Just the wool. All the Torah evaporated. just Korach covered, and that got finished as the Korach himself. So these are certain discussions, a very wonderful view from the Oroch Lamer on that Agadah, certainly what to think about for us. Once again, it's been a great, great pleasure sharing with the Torah with you. I wish you all bracha v'atzlacha and the Soros Tovos, the Klaus Philippa.
Thank you. That was Rabbi Emmanuel Bernstein speaking on Start the Day the Torah Way, Northwest London. And today's date. June 23rd, Shredish Thomas.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the Rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.